Support for WPR comes from Focus on Energy, committed to helping Wisconsinites focus on the planet by making smart energy choices. Energy resources for Earth Day and every day can be found at focusonenergy.com. Support for WPR comes from 4imprint, providers of promotional products for businesses, including embroidered apparel, trade show items, and logoed business gifts. More is at 4imprint.com. 4imprint, for certain.
Scott Simon is best known to public radio listeners as the longtime host of NPR's Weekend Edition. He's won just about every radio journalism prize there is, and he's written several best-selling books. The new one is called Baby, We Were Meant for Each Other, in praise of adoption. It tells the story of how Elise and Lena came to live with Scott and his wife, and introduces us to several other adoptive families. And Strange Champs knew Scott back in the day when they were both at NPR. After they caught up, she asked him a potentially sensitive question about adoption.
You know, a generation or two ago, there was some social stigma about adoption. I mean, it wasn't that unusual for adoptive parents to keep their child's adoption a secret. Today, with adoption so much more common, things are very different. But I wonder whether there are still some stigmas, you know, subtler perhaps, but still there.
You know, I guess we'll find out. I can't say we've noticed that now. I mean, the whole idea of concealing adoption from our children was just not available, given the fact that they're from China. And, you know, they've been aware from an early age, from, you know, whenever we've begun to converse with them, that they're from China and that they're adopted. Our children went through an utterly delightful period, both of them, where they assumed everybody was adopted. Mm. We have a cat named Leona, whom they call Nana. And never forget, one day Elise just looked up, and our 7-year-old now, and asked my wife, said, "Mama, was Nana a baby cat in China?"
I didn't actually mean so much the stigma attached to the children or that they would feel, but whether there are subtle ways in which you and your wife feel, you know, very slightly diminished, as though being an adoptive family is somehow lesser.
No, I think if anything, my wife and I must say the dozen other families that we talk to in the book, because as my wife and I are the first to point out, we've only been parents for 6 years and change, so we have a lot to learn. We have a lot ahead of us, so that's why we talk to people like Frank DeFord. He and his wife Carol adopted Scarlett, a daughter from the Philippines. Steve Inskeep, who grew up adopted by his parents in Indiana. Steve Levitt, the Freakonomics professor, University of Chicago, he and his wife also have two daughters adopted from China. Jeff Seller, the Broadway producer, he and his partner have two children. I won't go on, but I think all of us would report that, if anything, we feel that family ties might be stronger in a family which is tied up with adoption, because I think you are inspired to state aloud some things that another family sometimes just might get a little bit taken for granted. As my wife points out, there's no such thing as a casual adoption. Actually, contrary to maybe what some people might suppose, I think it suggests to us that adoption itself is kind of the tie that binds. Mm. Adoption itself is an act that brings you together.
Let's talk about your own story. Your girls are 7 and 4 now. What are they like?
Well, I mean, isn't it plain from the book, Anne? They're the most wonderful, brilliant little girls in the world. The older one, Elise, is a little bit more notably mischievous than the younger one, who lets her older sister do some of the mischievous stuff. By contrast, I think the younger one is the one who's, I think, is most notably still bound to us, whereas Elise is eager to go off and sort of put her pugnacious little nose against the world.
What are they like doing most right now? Do they have current enthusiasms?
Yes, indeed. Elise is passionately interested in the ballet and takes it several times a week. She's passionately interested in horse riding and the arts generally. She loves performance. She loves dance. She loves art. She loves color. So she has interests which are becoming, I think, pretty obvious and lucid and clarified in our minds. Beanie, as we call Lena, who is our youngest daughter, she has a notably affectionate nature. She's the most just gorgeously wonderful, warm and warm-hearted little girl that you can imagine. She really believes in the concept of friendship, and she really believes in friendship. She really believes in love. She really believes she loves to reach out to people. She loves to play. She loves to be held. I think affection for her is a way of life. And they're just wonderful together. Mm-hmm. They are loyal to each other 85% of the time. There is that There is that 15% where you think you might have to call a SWAT team. But, you know, that's not a bad percentage. It's even, I think, less than 15% now. You know, sometimes older sisters go through a period where, as a friend of our family once said, you know, when Elise would sometimes hug Lena, she would sometimes hug her the way a python hugs a pig. But she hadn't done that in a while now. And I think they are very loyal to each other. And this is another thing in adoptive families. I think their two-ness underscores for them that they're a family and that we're a family together, this quartet called the Simons.
Well, one of the themes that runs throughout your book is the way in which adoption is just as natural a process as the old-fashioned form of giving birth. You kind of set it up so that there are all these parallels to what we've come to think of as the modern American birth process. For instance, for couples having babies the old-fashioned way, there's that first glimpse of your baby in the ultrasound photo. Your story begins in the same way, with a photo that arrived in the mail from China?
Yes, hardly an ultrasound photo. I'm going to go off mic a little bit to fish my wallet out of my pocket because I have the first picture that we ever got.
You still carry it around?
Yes, of course I still carry it around. Absolutely. I will for the rest of my life. I will be buried with it. No time soon, I hope. It says it's a picture of Elise, our oldest daughter. She was 4 months old at the time, and this just utterly wonderful little tiny sparrow's mouth and surprised eyebrows. And underneath it says GMA, which is her Chinese name, now her middle name, GMA Simon. And I got this photo, as I did a few years later when we got the picture of Lena. And there was just something in her face, the kind of tiny, tender shoulders that just called out to me. And I had been prepared for the fact that as soon as I held our child in our arms, I would feel that my life had been fundamentally altered, and I would understand within seconds that I was holding a little girl who I would lay down my life for if that was ever necessary. I didn't expect that to begin to happen with the photo, but that is exactly what happened. I would pick up the photo. I'd be traveling before we got Elise and then before we got Lena, and I'd sometimes take it out just to look at it, and I would kiss it, and I would just kind of whisper, "We're coming, baby."
So then there's the actual delivery, which, no matter how you're doing it, is a fairly surreal experience. You know, you go in a big building as a couple and you leave with a baby.
Yeah, I think I read in the book that you go in talking about theater and restaurants and films and concerts, and you come out talking about Cheerios and baby wipes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, your life is fundamentally altered there.
And, of course, for you, this was a hotel in China, right?
Yes. Well, the Nanchang Adoption Center, then we brought them back. We brought Elise back to our hotel room. Mm-hmm. Lena, our second little girl, was actually brought to our hotel room. They said, "Be in your room at 4 o'clock. We'll knock on the door with your child."
And talk about room service.
Yes, exactly. We were told to be in our hotel room, and they didn't knock on the door exactly at 4. It was more like 4:05 or 4:10. And, well, we'd had a little picture of Lena. And Elise began to bounce around the room as she heard the knock and said, "My sister, my sister, my sister." And they brought this little girl in and put her down on the round kind of conference table that's in the living room of the suite. And they put her down on the table, and my wife and I looked very carefully. And at first, she did not look like the little girl in the picture. And my wife said, "Are you sure she's the right one?" We weren't hung up on getting one baby or another. I mean, you get a little portfolio about your child, and it wasn't as if we wanted the one who was reported to be, curious and clever as opposed to one who was, supposed to be something else. I think all of these descriptions, they're like astrology predictions. They tend to be the same anyway. So we weren't hung up on one child or another per se. We just didn't want a circumstance whereby we would fall in love with this child, and we were beginning to fall in love with her already the moment she was brought into our suite, and have some bureaucrats knock on the door an hour later and say, "Oh, I'm sorry, the Shmulevitzes down the hall, you actually have their baby and they have yours. Let's switch them right now." Mm. We didn't want that. So my wife said, "Are you sure she's the right one?" And it's the greatest moment of my life. Elise just reached out. She was 4 years old at the time. She just reached out and she held on to Lena's hand and she said, "It doesn't matter." And, it's the greatest moment of my life. It just reminded us of that this little girl who had been given up herself should reach out at that moment and remind us of what really mattered in life, and that this didn't matter. It didn't matter if she was the girl in the photo or not. she was ours, and we were going to go on through life together with each other. And just her instinctive tenderness and her instinctive kindness, it'll always be the signature moment of my life, I suspect.
You know, all parenting is partly an exercise in letting go. From the very first steps they take away from you to the first days in kindergarten, first sleepaway camp. I'm not past that yet.
You are breaking my heart.
Well, you wrote this. You wrote that it's all about letting go, but that adoptive parents, you know, in some ways learn this early.
I think we learn and have to come to grips with the fact earlier, maybe than some other families, you know, that love is not an exclusive thing. Not even sometimes the love between parents and a child. My wife and I understand that there is someone who gave birth to women in China who gave birth to our daughters who love them as much as we do. And we are permanently grateful for the act of bravery that they undertook to even have our daughters and to put them in a place that they were pretty certain they would be found and would have a better chance at life. So we come to terms with the fact early on that the love we feel for them is not exclusive. And I think in families where adoption is a fact, that's the case. I mean, one of my favorite stories in the book is about Martin Simon, the son of Paul Simon, late senator from Illinois, and his wife, Jean. You know, Martin grew up thinking that he was Cherokee because it said Native American on his birth certificate. Years later, when he was 28, he met his birth mother, a nice woman named Nikki. And as he said to me, she looked about as American Indian as Diana, Princess of Wales. And he said, "How are we Indian?" And she said, "Indian. Oh, they asked me what we were, and I said, we're all American." So that got written down as Native American. And, you know, and Paul Simon, his father, had become chairman of the Senate Subcommittee on American Indian Affairs. And you know, they had tried to, you know, put him in touch with his Indian heritage. That illustrates to me a couple of things. One is I don't think you should invest too much of your identity in your ethnicity, because even that has a way of surprising you and changing. But I love the story where Nikki finally met Paul and Jean Simon, because no doubt about it, I think when Paul and Jean heard that, oh, great news, my birth mother is called, on the one hand, they were happy for Martin. They knew this was an important connection to make in life. On the other hand, I think, as Martin says, they were, particularly Jean, were just a little bit worried. Look, we bathe, clothe, and feed this young man. Is he now going to fall in love with this woman 15 years older than him who gave birth and had to relinquish him? You know, just the way I think at some point our little girls will look at us and say, why did you take me out of the fastest growing economy in the world and bring me to this industrial backwater with this mortgage crisis? In any event, I love the story about how Jean Simon, when Nikki walked into Martin's apartment, Jean Simon walked across the room, hugged Nikki, and said, "Pleased to meet you, Nikki. Between the three of us, we sure produced something amazing, didn't we?" Hmm. And when Martin tells the story, his voice breaks like I guess mine is now. And he says, "I'm sorry." Jean has been gone a few years. He says, "I'm sorry. I just really miss my mother." And when he says that, you have no doubt that he's referring to Jean Simon. He loves Nikki, the birth mother who's come back into his life, and he also loves Jean. I think his love is balanced between these two women, but he certainly understands that the experience that he went through with Jean is utterly irreplaceable.
Scott Simon is the host of NPR's Weekend Edition and the author of Baby, We Were Meant for Each Other. He talked with Anne Steinchamps.